So, how are you all? How many people are attending?
Jan, there's total 43 people joining on Zoom, but I think like in India there's 4, so total around 47, 48 people.
Okay.
On Zoom now. Yeah.
Everything is nice, fine, yeah, here. We are in a little island of freedom. I don't know how it is around, but Well, which countries? Indonesia, Malaysia, Singapore, or where?
Yeah, I think mostly Singapore, Malaysia. I think there's someone from Canada as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think Indonesia as well.
So how is everyone doing?
Then I think we are still doing okay.
You still what? You still survive?
The same as before.
The same as before.
Yeah, I think not in there. But you want to see something? Can you?
Asking
Sting and
Linda, if you want to say something.
How's everything?
Alai? What?
Everything is good.
What?
Everything is good.
Look more for you and good health all the time.
Good health. Ah.
California.
What? Where is in California?
Southern California, Chino Hills, near Los Angeles, not too far.
Not too far. Ah.
Correct.
What?
Correct. We're still alive. We're breathing. Nice to see you, Tanajan.
Yeah. Have you met me before?
No, but we do watch your videos on YouTube consistently. My wife as well, Panjima Porn, is on the video conference, and we had a few questions for you. We've learned a lot, and thank you for providing astute knowledge necessary for survival and mental health in our existing society to everyone.
Yeah, I mean, that is the most important thing at the moment, yeah? I mean, not only with this corona, yeah? But also, you know, now with the war in Ukraine and so on, yeah. I mean, don't get interested in what is going on in the world. Get interested in what is going on in your heart, yeah. I mean, the only thing that keeps us sane and that keeps us safe is putting a lot of effort in our practice. Yeah? Otherwise, I mean, we get disturbed by all these news that have come along and all these restrictions and everything, yeah? Anyway, you know, when we sit there, when we sit and do meditation, I mean, there is no restriction. I mean, we are free, or we can be free. Remember this, you know, samatha, you know, the calm meditation, I mean, then we don't need the world in this moment, yeah? And the world is the world, you know, and what the world is doing, you know, we cannot change it, yeah? But what we can do, we can change. And how we react to whatever happens in the world, we can change. We cannot change the world. We cannot change other people. We can only change ourselves. And that is the most important thing for us, yeah, to remember. And especially in these times, you know, where there's a lot of upheaval, to really keep on practicing and practicing, you know, and not being interested, not getting entangled in what is happening in the world. Okay, understood? Now, I met you doing
much. Understood. Yeah. Kojai.
What?
Kojai.
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 Go Ben Kong Tyler. The California, Ben Kong Tyler. It's only English. Ben Persanket and dear. Met you doing, yeah. เมื่ออยากฟังก็ฟังก็ได้เมื่อไม่อยากเมื่ออยากกลับนะเดินชมคมนั่งสมาธิก็ได้นะนะ วันหน้าก็เมื่อมีโอกาสก็จะเทศในภาษาไทยนะแล้วปกติตอนเช้าก็แต่ช่วงนี้ก็ลุ่มพอก็เหนื่อยมากมีธุรกิจเยอะโอเคSo, I mean, start with the questions. Start with the questions. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Sorry, I just met you first. So I just got the questions that were submitted before. First question: how to reduce our karma when we have committed severe sins? They are supposed to bring us to eternal hell.
There is no eternal hell. That, I mean, if you have committed sins, we will go to hell, yeah? And that depends on, you know, how severe our sins were. Yeah? We will go to hell, and once our, I mean, in quotation mark, punishment is over, we come back. Yeah? So what is the problem, yeah? I mean, if you go against the laws of the country that we live in, we might need to go to prison for 5 years, or 20 years, or 25 years, yeah? And then after the time we come out again, yeah? And then we can start to do. Yeah, it is for knowing what we do, what we do unto others will come back to us. Yeah, and for this, you know, there is this kind of karma that tries to show us what we have done unto others, how much pain we inflicted unto others. Yeah? So I mean, there's no eternal hell, and there's no eternal heaven as well. Yeah? Forget about this, yeah? When you think about Buddhism, you know, there are 31 realms of existence. And we constantly, you know, go from one realm of existence to the next realm of existence. Once our human life is ended, you know, we go to whatever karma, whatever karma we have done, we go to the next existence, yeah? Unless we find the way out, yeah? And we find only the way out, you know, when the moment we become Sotapanna, or then Sakadagami, or Anagami, or Arahant. Yeah? Arahant is the final stage when we are completely out of the cycle of birth and death. Yeah? Before that, we are not out of the cycle of birth and death. Okay?
So, Ajahn, I think the question is, how to reduce our karma when we have committed severe sins?
We cannot reduce our karma. We have to just to bear the karma. I mean, why did we do the sin in the first place? We have to think about it very carefully before we do. Being mindful of our actions, being mindful of the results of our action. But there is no way that we can reduce our karma. The karma comes back. The only way there's if it happens, you know, that our karma back as a human being is to accept it, yeah, and not to fight it, yeah, because fighting it makes the karma stronger and makes it come back again and again and again, yeah? Until we can receive it. But there's no way, you know, how to reduce the sentence of the karma. Okay.
The follow-up question is eternal hell forever? I think, Ajahn, you answered just now. So the third question is, will we have a chance to reincarnate to normal human beings after being in hell?
Of course. Yeah. I mean, we all have been to hell. Every one of us, yeah. And we have been to hell not only one time or two times, yeah. I mean, we have been so often to hell, yeah. Some of us have been very long to hell, some of us have been not so long to hell, yeah. I myself have been very long time, you know, I mean, unimaginable long time to hell, but then I come back as a human being, yeah. But the normal way is when you come from hell, yeah. For most of the people, when you come back from hell, you are born as a ghost, and then once you finish the cycle of the ghost, then you can come back as a human being.
Good. So next question from Anita. Sometimes when the breath becomes so subtle, deep fear of death arises. The mind knows that to fully dive in, the ego has to die, although just for temporary. What should I do to move forward?
Ask yourself, when you go to sleep, are you afraid of not waking up? I mean, you have to prepare yourself. When the breath becomes very subtle and then it starts to stop, yeah, then a lot of people get afraid, yeah. And this we have to counteract before we actually do our samadhi, you know, and then see. Huh? Let's get interested. What is going to happen when the breath stops? Huh? We have to get interested, you know, because the citta will never die. This is our assurance. Huh? The citta will not die. Yeah? I mean, we can stop breathing, and we can, and even the heart can stop beating. But we will not die. Yeah. And when we come back out of Apana Samadhi, you know, then everything is normal again. Yeah. As I said before, you know, when you're born in a car, yeah, and when you have never gotten out of the car, and the moment you know you enter Apana Samadhi, is like getting out of the car. Whatever happens to the car, we don't know. But when we come back to the car, you know, I mean, the car works still fine. Yeah. And normally, you know, we are protected. We don't go longer than 7 days. Normally, after 7 days, we return to the body. Yeah? And then the body, if it is longer, then the body really can die. Yeah? But the citta doesn't die. Yeah? So we normally return, you know, after 6 or 7 days, yeah, and then we come back. Yeah? Then, of course, the body feels very weak, yeah, and then we need something, you know, to nourish the body, because it didn't have anything to eat or no nourishment. Yeah. So, I mean, the fear, you have to counteract the fear before you go into Apana Samadhi, yeah. you have to prepare yourself, yeah. And maybe it takes 10 times or 20 times or 30 times until you can progress, yeah. The moment the breath stops, yeah, you really have to jump to this knowingness that knows that the breath stops. Yeah. That is the whole key. Yeah. So keep that in mind. Huh? When you feel, you know, when you feel the breath stops, or when you know that the breath stops, jump to this knowingness that the breath stops. Yeah. And then you disappear. Yeah. And there is no fear. And actually, you know, be interested. What is happening when everything around us dies? Yeah, when the feelings goes, when the thoughts go, when the memory goes, when consciousness goes, when all these five khandhas disappear. What is happening? You know, if you have this question in mind, yeah, and to be interested in what is happening, you know, after all these five khandhas are gone, yeah. I mean, we are not afraid of things. And the citta is not part of the khandhas, yeah. Remember that. Okay?
So, next question from Anita. There are times when bright white light would appear. I hear conflicting views about it. Some teachers say that it is a tool to enter jhana and the light should be developed until it's stable. Another view is that it's just kilesa and it's useless. What do Ajahn think one should do when one encounters it?
The first thing is, don't be interested. If the white light continues and gets stronger and stronger, yeah, then pull it back into the heart. That's the only thing. Yeah. And then shine out the heart. The light actually is a sign of concentration. When the concentration grows, the light, some people see the light, yeah. But after a while, if you're not interested in the light won't appear, but the concentration is still there. Okay?
You are only start practicing bodily investigation after fully developing firm samadhi, or can I practice vipassana right after an hour of anapanasati? When is actually the best time to start vipassana?
Yeah, investigation of the body. Of course, you can start it after samatha, but if your mind is not calm during samatha, if you cannot concentrate on an object for at least 5 or 10 minutes without interruption, then vipassana will not work. Yeah, I mean, it will not get through. You have to understand, you know, the training of samatha is sharpening the knife. Yeah, and if you don't have a sharp knife, we cannot really do any kind of investigation. We can only do the most common investigation, like, you know, reflecting about our life, our birth, you know, our upbringing, and so on, and our sickness and death. That's what we can do all the time. Yeah, and there we don't need to have very strong strong samadhi. Yeah, but for really investigation of the body, you know, to see in the body, to go inside the body and see it, we really need strong samadhi. We really need very strong concentration, because we have to see. We have to see the object that we investigate, yeah? We have to see it with our internal eyes, yeah? And that takes a long time of training for most of us, yeah? For some people, they have trained it in the previous lives, they instantly see it, you know, and it is not a big deal for them. But for most of us, it will be a big deal, yeah? To see the path, you know, to disassemble the body, you know, and see the path, you know, that you disassemble, or that you cut off. If you cut off your hand, or if you cut off your arm, you have to see it in front of you. Yeah, it doesn't have to be very clear, but, you know, I mean, it has to be so, in a way so clear that you know this is the path, you know, this is the path, you know, that I lay now in front of me. Or if you do internal investigation and look at the organs and look at the internals of the body, you know, you have to concentrate on one object. Yeah, you don't do the you can do the whole body, or you, and then you have to have the whole body in your concentration, or you just do a part of the body. But you have to be able to concentrate and see how it changes over time. And once you have a clear vision, or more or less clear vision of the object, then you ask the question, yeah? Let me show, you know, let me see, you know, how is it internally? Let me see how it disperses into the four elements, yeah? And so on, yeah? Or what happens if there is fire, or what happens, you know, if the water goes out, or yeah, whatever you want to ask, yeah? But don't assume anything, yeah? The answers have to come from the heart, yeah? And in this case, you know, mostly it is visual. Yeah? For instance, when we have the whole body in front of us, yeah, and then we want to see how is death actually, yeah, and then we see slowly. It is a vision that we have then, how the body dies. You know, what goes out first, what comes then, and so on, until only the bones are left. Yeah. So I mean, good concentration. But for the normal reflection, you know, that is already part of investigation. I mean, we are born, then we have to learn to walk, then we have to learn to talk, then we go to school for 10 years, yeah, and then we have a job, and then we work the rest of our life, you know, for our living, yeah. And then when we are retired, you know, I mean, the body doesn't have any strength anymore, yeah. And during the time we get sick, you know. Some of us get very sick, others get little sick, you know? And then death is coming, yeah? And we can investigate that, yeah? Therefore this, you know, we don't need so much concentration. So this we can do any time. But of course the best time for all kind of investigation is when we come out of samadhi. Yeah? And the better our concentration in samadhi is, yeah, and the better the work of investigation works. Okay?
Thank you, Ajahn. Next question from Marvin. Does becoming a monk erase all past sins before monkhood due to keeping of precepts?
Oh, that would be great, you know, then everybody would become a monk or a nun, yeah? No. No, it doesn't erase anything, yeah? I mean, we have to battle with the kilesas, you know, and we have to accept the karma that is coming on along us, yeah? That is coming our way, and that is sometimes very difficult, yeah? I know a lot of Westerners who have become monks and got really so sick, you know, that they stopped being a monk, you know, and just went to the hospital, you know, went back into lay life, yeah, and went to the hospital, you know, and after a while, you know, the sickness was gone, yeah. Because when you choose to become a monk, the karma will be different, yeah, but it's still your karma, yeah. If you choose to go into the lay life, you know, I mean, the karma is different, yeah. It is like karma is, you have so many options. Eh? It is like, you know, being in a big city, you know, being in Singapore. If you go into the small alleys, you know, something will happen. Yeah. But if you walk on the big streets, other things will happen. Yeah? You have to understand that about karma. If you choose, you know, if you choose a different kind of life, you know, I mean, your karma will be different. Yeah. It can be stronger, it can be weaker, but the karma is still there. Yeah? When you go back into lay life, or when you choose another direction again after a while, I mean, you will meet the old karma if you go back on the old path. Yeah? Yeah?
No, I think my own question. So, if you stay as a lay life, right?
Yeah.
The karma that you bring with you doesn't really change. So the only way to change is to like become a monk?
No. For instance, you know, let's say you're an engineer, you know, and you work in a certain company, you know, that produces weapons, yeah. And then you see, I mean, I don't want to take part, you know, in destroying human lives, yeah. Then I go to another company, you know, and produce something that is helpful for the people, then also your karma will change, yeah. So it is, you know, I mean, it is like, you know, in Singapore there are many roads, or in other cities, yeah. I mean, whenever you choose a different kind of road, yeah. But if you're stuck, if you go on the same path, and in lay life you can choose many different paths. Some people get married, you know, I mean, that will bring some kind of karma. Other people don't get married, that will bring some other kind of karma. And so on and so on. You understand?
Yes, yes, sir. I think there's a similar question. So, can a female lay person become a nun to erase past previous sins?
Previous sins. Yeah. We cannot erase things.
Female. So just now was a male, right? For a month. So now, can a female lay person become a nun?
Of course.
Erase past previous sins.
No, but she cannot. There is no erasement. There is only, you know, there is only the way that, you know, different kinds of karma will happen when you become a nun, yeah? And there's different kind of karma when you stay in a lay life, yeah? And there's different kind of karma when you work, you know, when you work in a wholesome environment. That's why the Lord Buddha said, you know, I mean, we should work, you know, I mean, our work should be wholesome, you know, it should not be unwholesome. So, but we can choose, yeah? We can choose going the life of, you know, the life of a sinner, or we can choose, you know, being, even in lay life, being the life of a, you know, of a holy person, you know? But you cannot erase anything. You can avoid it, you know, by going in a different path, but you cannot, yeah? Maybe avoid it, you know, I mean, that depends on that. It is very difficult, you know, I mean, karma, to see through all kinds of karma, what happens, yeah? Very difficult. I mean, think about at the times of the Lord Buddha, yeah? For instance, there was somebody ordaining, yeah? And in the last past seven lives, you know, he was a very stingy person. He never gave anything to anybody. But at the time of the Lord Buddha, he probably had good karma as well. Yeah, he could ordain as a monk, yeah. But, you know, whenever he went on Pindapati, he just got one handful of rice, that's all, yeah. And then, what was it? Sariputta and Mokkalana saw that and said, they felt so sorry with this monk. Yeah, and then they just put their hands, you know, on the bowl so that the food that was going into the bowl did not disappear. But then, you know, when the monks were sitting and after the Anamodana, I mean, the food was gone already, yeah, again, yeah. So he just had a handful of rice. So then the Venerable Moggallana and Sariputta decided to put their hands on the bowl, yeah. So in this time, you know, after, I don't know how many pansas he had, how many years of rains retreat he had, but this was the first time, you know, he could eat, you know, to the full extent. And in the evening, he died of constipation. Yeah. So, eating little, you know, I mean, this is the karma that you cannot prevent this karma from coming back. I mean, if you have been stingy, you know, in your previous lives, you know, or if you harass people, you know, in your previous life, this will come back, yeah. No matter, you know, no matter if you're a layperson or no matter if you're a monk, yeah. So certain things will come back, you know, no matter what path you choose. Yeah. For instance, you know, how long we live, you know, that will not change, you know, if you go this path or that path. Yeah, I mean, get rid of the idea that you can erase karma. No. You can accept karma, and with accepting this karma, just let it, you know, just let it come, yeah? Accepting this karma, this karma will either, you know, get less and less and less, you know, or in the end it will disappear. But if you fight it, if you don't want it, you know, I mean, that is the worst thing that we can do with karma. It will come back, and each time, you know, we fight it or we don't want it, it is also a sort of fighting, it will come back stronger and stronger and stronger. Yeah? Yeah? Clear? More or less.
But second karma, you say, doesn't change. Matter
what,
like the timing of your death, like your lifespan.
What? I repeat this, please. I didn't.
Okay. Like you mentioned that certain karma, no matter what path you choose in your life,
yeah,
like your life is the same. It's already fixed.
Yeah. I mean, the length, you know, the time of your life or how you die, you know, I mean, this is pretty much fixed, yeah. And other parts of karma, you know, they will happen, you know, no matter what you do, yeah. But some of the karma you can avoid, you know, for this life, yeah. And especially, you know, if you go the holy path, yeah, now if you try to get rid of the kilesas, fight the kilesas, I mean, this will help a lot, yeah. But it will not, you know, it will reduce the strength of the karma, but it will not negate the karma. Anyway, you know, I mean, about this, you know, I mean, it is so difficult to speculate about it, yeah. And I just have a very rough idea about, you know, how karma, you know, goes through our lives. So I really cannot give you a very detailed description. The thing that I did is, you know, I mean, whatever happened to me, I accepted to be karma, yeah. Even when the Lord Buddha said there is a chance that it is not karma, I mean, I just accepted it because, I always looked, you know, I mean, if if that what produced that kind of karma is still in my heart. And I always found it, so I mean, I didn't care about very much about it. Yeah. Accept it, you know, I mean, accept it. Whatever you do, whatever comes back to you is because of your own doing, and not because of somebody else doing something to you. And when you can accept this, you know, I mean, your life is so peaceful. Yeah? But if you can't accept it, if you think other people do something to you, I mean, then you really have a hellish time. Yeah? If you think this person, you know, next door, you know, my next door neighbor, yeah, or the person in my next to my kuti, you know, is doing a lot of bad things, you know, to me, you know, he's trying to provoke me, then you have a problem. Yeah? Here in the monastery, you know, I mean, whatever happens to us, you know, it is because of our own doing, and then it is us to deal with this problem, yeah, of dislike. Yeah, so it's dislike. Okay.
Yes, Ajahn. Next question. Why do I get nauseous or slight headache when I go deep into meditation?
Nauseous or a slight headache when he goes deep into meditation?
Nauseous. But what is nauseous?
Also schwindelig.
Feel like vomiting. Most of the
time. Yeah, yeah.
No, because he's forcing it too much. Yeah? Most of the time, when we are forcing too much, you know, we get a headache or we get some strains in the body. Yeah? I mean, go with the flow. Go with the flow. Yeah, like I describe. You know, I mean, meditation is riding a horse. Yeah. As long as you see that the horse is going in the right direction, yeah. I mean, don't strangle it, yeah. Don't force it, yeah. We always there. Lots of us, you know. I mean, try to get rid, yeah. For instance, of noises that are coming from outside, of getting rid of thoughts or getting rid of feelings that are coming up. That's not the right way. That's not the right way of meditation. We have to accept this, you know, we have to see it. Okay, there's a feeling, go back to the Buddha or go back to the breath. And as long as we are staying with the breath, yeah, and if we don't force the breath, huh, I mean, there will be no headache and there will be no nauseous. Huh? But if we force things, yeah, if we, now I have to, yeah, I mean, this is normally the Western approach, yeah. If you try to force it too much, you will break sooner or later, yeah. Or you experience this. Yeah? Go with the flow, go with the ride of the horse. Yeah, I mean, think about it. Yeah? There's another, this is something that you really have to remember. I mean, riding a horse, yeah. I mean, if you go with the pace of the horse, yeah, as long as it goes in the right direction, fine. Yeah. Give yourself to the pace, yeah? I mean, feel it, you know? I mean, feel the breath, yeah? Don't try to manipulate the breath. Yeah? But if you see that you're off the breath, then bring the breath back, yeah? That means when the horse goes in the other direction, then, yeah, use a little bit of force, you know, to bring it back. If it doesn't want to go at all, then use for 5 minutes, you know? I mean, then use some force, you know, for 5 minutes. But then you have to relax, yeah? Otherwise, you know, I mean, all these things can happen. Yeah? Some people get a splitting headache, yeah? Because they force it too much. Yeah. And the other thing about meditation that we have to know is, the other simile is like dancing on a rope, yeah? We are constantly have to balance it. Yeah? It's not that we can, you know, can relax. You constantly have to balance. You know, on a rope, when you walk on a rope, you know, you constantly have to balance. Sometimes you have to go lean to the left. Sometimes you have to lean to the right. Then you have to lean to the left. And then you have to lean to the right, yeah? That means sometimes you have to follow, you know, your fellow breath more. And then sometimes, you know, you let go and then, you know, observe it more. And then you have to follow it more. And then you observe it more and so on, yeah? These are the two things that you have to remind yourself of. Yeah? Don't force it, yeah? Only when it's completely unwilling, then there's a time to force it a little bit. Yeah. But don't force the breath down the throat. Yeah. Just force the mind to go back to the breath. Yeah. If it's not willing, then force it back to the breath. Yeah. That's where we use the force. We don't use the force on the breath itself. And we don't want to manipulate or control the breath, how the breath is. If the breath is subtle, fine. If the breath is rough, fine. If the breath is short, fine. However the breath is, it is fine. Or however the Buddha is, it is fine. Yeah? We don't force it to be otherwise. Yeah? Because that produces bad results, bad side effects. We only remember one thing. We only want to observe how it is. And then, once we can concentrate on the breath, then we want to know how the breath is. Right? Because that leads to sati, to the knowingness of the citta. In the beginning, we might use labels, oh, the breath is long, or it is the in-breath, or it is the out-breath, or the in-breath is longer than the out-breath. We can use this label in the beginning to facilitate this knowingness that comes from the heart, yeah? But you shouldn't do it for very long, yeah? Just, we have to get to the knowingness. Yeah? How is the breath at the moment? Yeah? Is it between the in-breath and the out-breath? Know this point. Yeah? Or is it between the out-breath and the in-breath? Know this point. And if you do that, if you really go with it, yeah, give yourself to the breath. There's no problem getting easily concentrated. But we all have ideas how our meditation should be, and that is just a hindrance to the practice. Let the things be as they are, and just observe them. If you don't know how to observe, then go to the zoo and observe the animals, yeah? You cannot control them, yeah? Observe them for an hour, sit there, you know, observe the animals, the monkeys, you know, especially the monkeys, it reminds us of our monkey mind, yeah? Observe them, you know, what they do, yeah? And be very clear, you know, observe any detail. And that is the same thing, that kind of observation you need also for the breath, yeah? Or for the Buddha. Okay?
Thank you, Ajahn. So, next question. Hello, Ajahn Martin. What's your take on depression? Do you think it can mark a point in the process of waking up, becoming enlightened to the true nature of reality?
What has depression to do?
He says if it's maybe a part of this process.
A part of the process? Depression? No, it's not a part of the process. I mean, I really don't understand, you know, what the question is there. I mean, depression is not, yeah, depression is not a good state, yeah? I mean, it shouldn't arise, you know, it shouldn't arise, yeah? And if it arises in the state of our practice, we should follow up, you know, we should do the reflection. What came before the depression, yeah? I mean, depression is, an emotion or something like that, yeah? I mean, a very, very sticky emotion, yeah? But an emotion starts, yeah? Any kind of emotion starts with a feeling, and then there's a thought, and there's a memory, and there's a feeling, and a thought, and memory. I mean, it is just like you throw sugar into a hot pan, you know, and you get the sugar candy, yeah? I mean, it blows up, yeah? Or the avalanche, you know, you throw a stone, you know, be it a thought, be it a memory, or be it a feeling, yeah? And it rolls down the hill, you know, in which each turn, you know, it takes on more snow. Until it becomes an avalanche that you cannot stop, yeah. And depression is this kind of avalanche that is very difficult to stop. Hmm? The only thing that how you can get out of it, yeah. I mean, just don't think anymore. Yeah. Stop thinking, and then the depression will end. Yeah. But if you constantly think about it, you know, and feel sorry for yourself, you know, or this is not working out, these are all ideas, you know, that are part of this depression that makes this depression, you know, stronger and stronger. Huh? If you stop thinking, there's no depression. Huh? And there's also no fear. Huh? If there's no memories there and no thinking, there's no fear. And there's no no loneliness as well. Yeah? That's, yeah, with these strong emotions, I mean, we really have to trace back every movement, yeah? I mean, when you see this avalanche coming, yeah? I mean, hold it, yeah? And then roll it back so that it, you know, gets rid of each layer of snow or each layer of feelings and memories and thoughts, yeah? Until you come to the stone, you know, until you come to the stone that fell into the snow. That's why I really recommend, you know, the daily reflection. Do it, you know, because it is helpful in any kind of circumstances. Eh? Especially, you know, when you have emotions coming over you that you cannot deal with it. Once the emotion is gone, you know, I mean, then do the reflection. What happened? When did it start, yeah? Go back, yeah? Go back every turn. Or start at the beginning, when you see the beginning and then see how it you know, evolves. Yeah? Because it is not natural, you know, it is made up, yeah? Okay, understood. I hope this helps. Yeah, I don't know. I really don't understand the question correctly.
Next question. If we have a mental illness like bipolar, will repeating Budo help? Besides taking medicine, what is the way to overcome such an illness? Thank you, Ajahn.
Bipolar disorder. It's like a sort of depression.
Then you have to explain to me what is bipolar is disorder, because I don't know. Does anybody of you know?
Like you vary from extremes, from extreme.
Oh, you go from extreme, yeah. I mean, it's the same thing. Yeah, you go from one extreme to the next. Yeah, I mean the only solution is, of course, meditation. Yeah. I mean, when you feel good, you know, I mean, you get arrogant, yeah? And then the next moment you feel bad, you know, and you become depressed, yeah? And then after a while you feel better, you know, and then you become arrogant again. I mean, I met a person like this, it is, you know, if it is very strong, you know, I mean, it is very difficult. But the solution is really just like I said before, yeah? Stop thinking. And there will be no bipolar disorder anymore. Yeah? If the person can do it, yeah, that's fine. If the person cannot do it, yeah, I mean, at least you should try it. Yeah. And then once a bipolar disorder becomes, you know, weaker, you know, then he can trace it back to what happened. Yeah? That might be not satisfying, but you know, that's all what I can say, yeah? I have only one medicine, Puto. Yeah? The moment, as long as you're with Puto, or as long as you're with the breath, nothing of this sort happens. If you replace, and that is the important thing, replacing, yeah? Replacing the attention, you know, with the attention on the breath or on the Buddha, yeah? Whatever you put your attention on, yeah, be it about this disorder, or be it on this person or that person, on this situation or that situation, or this thought or this memory, I mean, pull it back and put it back, you know, replace the attention of that object, you know, with the object of your meditation, be it the Buddha or be it the breath, yeah. Or when you do investigation, be it the investigation of the body, you know, this part of the body. Just replace it. Don't push it away. Yeah? The problem is, you know, we don't want certain things to happen. Yeah? I mean, everybody, you know, wants to meditate, he wants to get calm and peaceful. Yeah? This is not going to happen. Yeah? Sometimes it happens, but most of the time it's not going to happen. So, I mean, we just keep repeating Buddha, or just keep observing the breath. That's all. It's only our only help. It's the only medicine that we have. Okay?
Next question. What are the sure signs of progress for one who is practicing Vipassana?
There is no progress. People always think about progress, yeah? There is no progress. I mean, when you start your meditation, you observe the breath and start investigation. Yeah? Yeah? And before you become an arahant, you do the same thing. Yeah? You observe the breath, yeah, and you investigate. Yeah? The progress is, yeah, if you want to call it progress, that things become easier and things become lighter, but the work is the same. And you cannot measure progress, yeah? Because one day it just seems to be light and the next day it is heavier. Yeah? So, I mean, where's the progress? But over the time, after years, you can see, you know, that you're not so much attached to the body anymore, or you're not attached to the food anymore. Huh? Over years, you can see, you know, I mean, you will realize or you will know that you're not so much attached, yeah? So if you call that progress, yeah? But that is the only thing, yeah? And, I mean, there is, you know, the four stages of enlightenment, that is real progress, yeah? But this you will know. I mean, if you enter Sotapanna or Sakadagami or Anagami or Arahantship, yeah? This is the only progress that you really can measure, yeah? The other thing is, you know, it just seems to be, yeah? I mean, just go the path, yeah? There's another simile that I often use, you know, I mean, for our progress, yeah? In meditation. I mean, you want to dig a tunnel through a mountain, yeah? And all what you can do is, yeah, you loosen one stone and throw it out. Then you loosen the next stone and throw it out, yeah? Until you come to the end of the mountain, yeah? You will not know where you are. Because it's dark, yeah? And all what you can do is take another stone out. And then take another stone out. And if you take one stone out, you know, and the light comes in, then you know you have passed. Huh? That's it. That's a progress, yeah? And people always think about progress, yeah? Yes, we are taught this, yeah? You have to have progress. We have to progress in school. We have to progress in our work. We have to progress in, yeah, maybe even in our family or relationship. No. Meditation is not, we can't use the same terms, you know, for meditation. It's only taking out one stone and putting it away. And taking out the next stone and putting it away. It's just like cleaning our heart. The moment we open our heart, yeah? And that is what Samatha does, yeah? I mean, it is the way to our heart. Yeah? Our heart is locked, yeah? I mean, the moment we open the door to our heart, all the things that we have put for lifetimes on lifetimes, you know, in there. Huh? First of all, you know, from this life, I mean, it all boils out. Yeah? We have to accept it and put it away. And then we have to accept it and put it away. Huh? It is just cleaning our attic that we have never cleaned for 50 years. Yeah, we just throw things in that we don't want anymore. We don't want to use anymore. We just throw in the attic. Yeah, I mean the door bulges, you know, and the moment we open the door, you know, all the things are throwing back to us. Yeah, all what we can do is take the big things, you know, and take it away. Then the next big thing and take it away. Until all the big things, you know, in the attic or in our heart, yeah, are removed. And then we start with the small things, yeah, with the little things, yeah, yeah? With the nuts and bolts or with the tissues and so on. And once all the things are removed, then we start to clean the dust, yeah. I mean, it's a long, long time, so don't even think about it, yeah. Just do it, yeah. One stone at a time. One stone at a time. Okay?
Next question. What should a practitioner do during the critical moments of dying to ensure good rebirth?
Well, good rebirth, you know, depends on the karma that you have created in this life and also depends on the karma of your previous life. If you stay with the Buddha or if you stay with the breath, that is the best practice you can do. Yeah? Or if you reflect about the breath, investigate pain that comes with the breath, with the death, yeah? That's where you should focus on. Investigate the pain of the death, yeah? Or stay with the Buddha or stay in the calm. Yeah? And then you will have a choice, you know, where to go. Yeah? Because you have several kinds of karma, yeah? You might go to heaven first, yeah? You might choose to go to heaven first. You might even have the karma, you know, to come back as a human being, or you have the karma to go to hell. Yeah? So if you go to heaven first, you know, when the heaven is over, then you go to hell, yeah? Or do you want to go to hell first and then go to heaven? You know, it is up to you. But most of the people, yeah, who don't have sati, who don't have this awareness in the time of death, I mean, they will be thrown by the strongest kind of karma. So if it is hell, they will be thrown into hell. If it is heaven, you know, they will be thrown into heaven, yeah? Or whatever karma, yeah? Maybe it is being the karma of being born as an animal or being born as a ghost, you know, I don't know, yeah? But the strongest karma will lead you to the destination. Yeah? But if you have awareness in the moment of death, yeah? Be it, you know, be it with samatha meditation or be it with investigation of the pain of death, then you will be able to choose. Yeah, Lungda Mahabho talked about a monk, you know, I mean, a monk who died, you know, and then, and he explained it in his next life, yeah. About when he died, you know, he suddenly was on a path and he met an old man, and the old man told him, ah, there is the way to heaven, yeah. But this monk, you know, that died, you know, said, oh, yeah, yeah, okay, thank you, you know, but at the moment I'm very thirsty. I'm thirsty, I need some water to drink, yeah. So he was looking for, and then he saw, you know, he saw a mother, yeah, a pregnant mother at the Welsh, you know, I mean, digging, what is it, hauling water, you know, and then he went into this pregnant mother and was born as a human being, yeah, and then later on he met Lungda Mahabho and told him the story. So you have the choice, yeah. There was another story, but I don't know where it's coming from. So forget about it. Okay? Next question.
Next. Considering how your teacher was the great Lungda Mahabho, how do we recognize such great master whom we can fully trust to lead us to Nirvana?
Your heart. That's the only way. That's how I recognize Lungda Mahabho. Yeah? But that means you have to have an open heart. Yeah? If you have views and opinions, huh, this is the way to go, or this is the teacher, or he's so famous, you know, to go here, and the famous to go there. Huh? But, I mean, I just got a book, you know, I mean, somebody gave me a book, you know? And I was reading it was called Straight from the Heart, yeah. And then I was so fascinated, you know, I mean, I said, this is the only time, you know, I heard somebody speaking the truth. You must know the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth, yeah? And who is it? You know, Lungda Mahabho, so I have to go and see him, yeah? I mean, let your heart, you know, let your heart guide you in this direction. Don't follow your mind that tells you, oh, this is better, you know, going to this country is better, or going to India is better, yeah, Bodh Gaya or whatever, or going to Sri Lanka, you know, or going to this master, or going to that master, because other people say, oh, this is a great master, but he might not be the great master for you. Yeah? Just like me, you know, I'm not a great, you know, I might be a teacher for a few people, yeah? But I'm not a teacher for all the people. Some people don't have faith in me, other people have faith in me, you know, I mean, it's up to them, yeah. If you have faith in a person, you know, you will see it, yeah. And even if you're wrong after a while, you know, like I mean, my first teachers, you know, I followed them, you know, until a point where I said, oh, there's some doubt, you know, if they know really the things that, you know, that they teach, yeah? And then I decided, you know, okay, to leave, yeah? And then I went to another teacher, you know, and the same thing, you know, I said, oh, this cannot be right, you know, my heart, you know, told me, you know, this cannot be right. And until I found Lungda Mahabho, and then I didn't have to go to see any other monk, yeah? I know, you know, people go from one arahant, you know, at least a tithe, yeah? But other people as well, go from one place to the other, and they go all around the world, you know, and never find anything, yeah? Because they're not driven by their heart, they're driven by their ideas, they're driven by their mind. If you feel you're comfortable, then stay until you know, until some doubt is arising, you know, if this teacher really can help you. Yeah? And if this doubt is real, then go and see another teacher. Lungda Mahapo said very clearly, I'm not a teacher for all people. Yeah? I'm a teacher for a certain kind of people. Yeah? Because the king of Thailand wanted him, you know, to make a meditation center, yeah? An international meditation center. And then his answer was, no, I'm not a teacher for all people. I'm just a teacher for a few people. Yeah? Just like me. Yeah? I'm a teacher for very, very few people. Yeah? But I hope that these students of mine, you know, can benefit from the practice that I explain. Yeah? And as long as they can benefit, you know, they should stay. The moment when they see they cannot benefit anymore, then they should leave. Yeah? I have no qualms about that. Yeah? Next question.
Will people really live for the senses? It seems that many people live to make their lives easier. This thing seems to be connected, but one comes from pleasure and the other comes from dukkha. So why do people live and what is the real purpose from a deeper standpoint?
Can you explain this question to me?
Yeah, so I think the question is, some people, they live for the pleasure, like the enjoyment of the sense.
Delight, or what?
And delight, yes, delight.
Okay.
For the delight from the sense.
Yeah, yeah, that is what,
and then,
not some people, all of the people, delight in pleasure, other people delight in pain, yeah? Yeah? And then we go in delight in pain. I mean, delighting in pain doesn't mean, you know, I mean, you feel sorry for yourself. That is how you delight in pain, yeah? You know, I have such a hard time, you know, listen to me. Yeah? Self-pity. That is every person, yeah? So, not some people.
And many people need to make their lives easier. So, on one hand, it seems like people live for the sense delight, pleasure.
Samatha.
Pleasure and then.
The answer is very, very simple. Yeah? Calm meditation. Yeah? Because the moment thoughts and memories stop, you know, future and past disappear, and fear and loneliness disappear. Yeah? That is one experience, you know, I mean, that overcomes all the sense pleasures. And if you go there, you know, you see, you know, the sense pleasures, you know, bring you maybe some sort of sukha, you know, but then afterwards dukkha because the sense pleasure disappeared. So I mean, the only way, yeah. I mean, what did the Lord Buddha say? I mean, if it wouldn't have, you know, the pleasure of the, yeah, he talked about the jhanas because, you know, he was a jhana person. If you don't have the pleasures of the jhanas, you know, I mean, nobody would go this path, yeah? I mean, it is really strenuous, yeah? I mean, it can really be very difficult, very, very daring to go this path, yeah? So if you don't have a place, yeah? If you don't have a place, you know, that we can call home, yeah? Or that where we can find rest, yeah? Just like samadhi, or, you know, for a few people, it might be the jhanas, yeah? Then we are not able to go this path because the sense pleasures seem to be more, yeah, more gratifying than if you don't have that experience. Right? The sense pleasures, you know, seem to be gratifying, and that's why people go for it. But if somebody has the experience of samadhi, or especially, you know, deep samadhi, I mean, then all the pleasures of the world, all the sense pleasures, I mean, are flat, you know, are sort of flat, you know. I mean, they don't excite us anymore. I don't know how to say it. Not flat, but compared to the pleasure of samadhi, you know, they are little odd. Sorry, my English is gone. I don't even know it in German, otherwise I could ask you.
So, last part of this question is, why do people live, and what is the real purpose from, what's the real purpose maybe to live? What's the real purpose of life?
What is the real purpose of life? Everybody has to find out for himself, If people enjoy life, the real purpose of their life is to enjoy life. If they want to build something, the real purpose of their life is to build something, to create things. But if their real purpose of life is, to find the way out of birth and death, then this is the real purpose of their life. You cannot mandate, real purpose for every being. Some people, some people like, just look at the world. Some people like to play games all day long. So I mean, that is their purpose, to play one game after the other. And other people play the game of life, with birth and with death, And then after death, they play again the next game of life, and the next game of life. So I mean, you can't say, there's a general purpose of life. But if you're getting sick, if you investigate dukkha, how much dukkha you have in your life, I mean, then you get the sense of urgency that you want to get out of this cycle of death. Or first of all, you want to understand what is happening, that there is a cycle of death, that we are born, and that we will die, and that we are born again and die again, and born again and die again, And then we want to get out, and then we look for the way out, And then this will be our purpose of life. I mean, we might forget it in one lifetime, and then in the next lifetime we remember it. It depends on our way, to the end of dukkha, is a long way, it's not a way of one lifetime. I mean, how often have we been? How often have we been monks or nuns, How often have we been women? How often have we been men? How often have we been animals? And so on, and so on. So in one lifetime, we really exert ourselves, being a monk, castrate ourselves, And then in the next life, we want to enjoy life, So we enjoy one life, or maybe two lives, and then we say, this is so much dukkha, let's go back, Let's go back to, go back to the monkhood, or, go back to the nunhood, And then, then try again, and then, it's so difficult, and then we skip, we go back into the lay life, and enjoy it a little bit until the dukkha comes, on again, and say, this is so difficult, let's find a way out, I mean, how many lifetimes have we done this? You can't even remember how many lifetimes, I mean, think about Lumpumman, he had 90 eons of lifetimes already where he was on the path of Buddhahood. 90 eons, one eon is one uncountable time. And think about how many lives, did he have in this one uncountable time. And he had 90 eons of life with, already done. And then he said, to become a Buddha, I have to do 90 more eons, And I don't know how many eons, an arahant has to do, before he becomes an arahant, As I said, the way of Buddhism, it starts, with getting interested, what is this all about, I mean, what is karma, what is birth, what is death, what comes after death. Getting interested, and so reading the suttas of the Lord Buddha until we understand it. And then in the next time we read it again and read it again until we come to the moment where we start to practice. Then we start to practice a little bit, read, practice a little bit, read, and practice a little bit, read, until we are satisfied with reading, we know everything that we need to know, and then we just practice, and don't read anymore. So I mean, you can't say that there's a purpose for every being. The purpose of life is different. Some people just want to have a family, want to live in peace, yeah, want to have a nice wife and husband and have kids, yeah. That is the purpose of the life. Yeah? I don't condemn anybody, yeah. But that's why, you know, why this monastery, or what is the purpose of this monastery is to. Well, what's going on? The purpose of this monastery is, you know, to collect a few people who want to make an end, you know, of dukkha, to lead them to the end of dukkha, to practice. We're not studying here. Okay.
Ajahn, what do you think about the world?
What? About the world?
About
what?
About the world. The world.
The world.
About the war? I don't know. Huh? I mean, there's a fire spreading, yeah. And when it is, you know, when it is completely erupting, yeah. And probably it is, you know, it might be the mid of this year, yeah. When there's a world war. I don't know. But it seems to, you know, but it seems to get more and more serious now. I don't know what the people think. As I said in the beginning, and don't be concerned about it. I do look, you know, to see the signs, how it is developing. Yeah? When I get good signs, you know, when I see, you know, it is developing towards World War III, you know, then I will let you know. Yeah? At the moment, I can't say anything. Yeah? There might be some rational people that stop everything, yeah? It happened before, yeah? And think about the Cuban Missile Crisis, yeah? I mean, there was Kennedy who stopped it, yeah? And then suddenly, you know, I mean, there was 40 years of nothing, yeah? No war and so on. Yeah? So it can happen, you know, that everything, you know, that there are some rational people, but I don't see them. I don't see them around, yeah? I see only war hawks, you know that. Yeah. But there's the other problem of the economy. Yeah. I mean, think about how much money they printed in the last 2 years. Yeah. I mean, who is paying the debt? Nobody can pay the debt. Yeah. So I mean, the best thing is, you know, to eliminate all the debt is war. Yeah. And that's probably what they are going for. So don't concern yourself with it, yeah? I mean, concern yourself, you know, if you're with the Buddha or not with the Buddha, or with your breath or not with the breath. That's the only thing. When the mind goes out, pull it back to the breath, yeah? When you go to work, you know, be with the Buddha or be with the breath, you know? And if you have to think at work, you know, I mean, then think, you know, whatever you have to think about it. But if you have a mechanical work, you know, I mean, use Buddha, or use the breath, yeah? Don't think about it, you know, prepare yourself. And the more you go to the heart, the more you know what is right to do. Yeah? This is the best insurance you have. Yeah? Nobody can tell you what is going to happen to you except yourself. Yeah? And the more you stay with yourself, the more you stay with your heart, yeah? The better you know what is the right thing to do. Yeah? I don't know what is going to happen. Maybe a misguided missile, you know, is going to hit me, you know, in my kuti, you know, and then I blow up into bits and pieces. I don't know. Yeah? The only thing that I can hope for is that at that moment, you know, I will be with the Buddha or with the breath. Yeah? And if I train that every day, you know, I mean, most likely I will be with the Buddha. Yeah? Ah, the wind. Okay.
Longpo once mentioned that someone actually went into samadhi while listening to long dharma was talk. Using the same analogy, if one listens to chanting with our chitta, can one enter samadhi too?
It probably is possible. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you can go into apana samadhi, but With chanting, it just has a different effect, you know. I mean, you most probably remember the chant, so the chant goes on. With listening to this, and you really don't know what is going on. So, I mean, you're much more interested in following the desa now, following the the talk, you know. So that leads you much easier into apana samadhi. Yeah? I mean, listen, you know, without trying to understand. Yeah, that is the key to the practice. Just listen to every word, every nuance of the word. And if you listen very closely, you actually know the next word before it is actually spoken, that comes out of the mouth. Because the intention to think this word, yeah, comes before the word is spoken. So if you're really, you know, if you're really on the level of intention, if you listen, yeah, listen to the talk, you know, where you see, where you with the intention of the speaker, I mean, then you can very easily go into samadhi. I mean, it is very helpful, yeah, just listen to talks of Lungta Mahabua, yeah, or listen to talk, but that these talks cannot be philosophical, or it cannot be, you know, ecclesiastical or something like that. It has to come, this talk has to come from the heart. Because when the talk comes from the heart, then you can listen with your heart. Yeah? If the talk comes from the mind, you know, from understanding, from the mind understanding, you know, then you can never go into samadhi. I mean, that's how I know, you know, if somebody is talking from the heart or if somebody is talking from the mind. If it really a lot of thoughts, you know, a lot of memories, you know, occur in my mind, then I know this person is not talking from the heart. If I can listen, you know, without even thinking, you know, then I know this talk comes from the heart. You understand? Yeah. I mean, if you listen to the chanting, you know, if you chant yourself or listen to the chanting, that's fine, you know, and afterwards you do your samatha meditation. Because that gives you a first calm, you know, listening to a chant, you know, gives you the first calm, you know, and then go on, you know, go on with your Buddha or breath meditation. Or listen to a talk, yeah, listen to Lungta Mahabua's talk, yeah. It has the advantage that you don't understand the language anyway. Yeah? Most of us. Okay? Huh? Don't hear anything.
If it's possible to enter, yeah. If it's possible to enter samadhi by listening to the chanting, is that comparable to Buddha or breath meditation? Which is better, or are they all equally effective?
No, they are not equally. Yeah. I mean, it will rarely happen, you know, that you really enter samadhi or. I mean, it depends on what kind of samadhi. Even access samadhi, it is, yeah. You might get calm, but you don't enter samadhi. Yeah? Listening to a chant, I don't think it is not equal. Yeah. Listening to a talk that comes from the heart, if you really intend on listening, that is much more likely, you know, to get into samadhi. The chant, I mean, from my own experience, you know, but you know, I'm not a chanter. Yeah? From my own experience, you know, chanting yourself or listening to chanting makes the heart calm, yeah, and it makes the heart, you know, sometimes, you know, quite happy. Yeah? So, and with this kind of background, I mean, it is then you go into samatha, yeah, meditation, breath meditation or Buddha meditation, and it is much easier to get more and more calm. But I'm not sure. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, it's okay. I've never heard of the story. I only heard of the stories, and I know from my own practice that I can get extremely calm when I'm listening to talks of Lungta Mahabua. Okay? We'll try it out. Yeah. But the important thing is... The important thing is not to understand the chant, what they are chanting about, yeah? Or not to understand the talk, what he's talking about. Yeah? That's the important thing, otherwise you will never get into samadhi. If you try to understand, yeah? The amazing thing when I listen to Lungta Maha voice, for a while, you know, maybe for 30 minutes, you know, just getting calm and calm and calm. And then Lungta Maha was talking about a subject, you know, that where I was just, you know, doing investigation. And then actually, you know, he led my investigation in that time, yeah. And then he went off, you know, talking about something else, you know, and then went calm again. Lungta Maha told the same thing about listening to Lumphuman, yeah. That his mind, you know, I mean, whenever Lumphuman hit, you know, a topic, you know, where he was just investigating it for the last time, yeah, then he really led him, you know, to do all kinds, you know, how to do this investigation, how to go around the subject, you know, how to open up this object. Yeah. But the moment we try to understand, everything goes. Yeah. Okay, now you can.
Can you explain more detail about what we see in others is the mirror of ourselves? Does it include like likes and dislikes in others?
I mean, dislikes is always, you know, some sort of behavior, some sort of words, you know, some sort of actions that other people do. Yeah. That arises our dislike. Yeah. And these dislikes, you know, we look at the action, you know, we look at the behavior of this person, and then we look for the behavior in ourselves, because it is there as well. Yeah. It might not be so strong, yeah. Or it might be even stronger. Or it might be not even at the surface, yeah. So you have to look very closely. Because if you dislike somebody else's behavior, that means this it is within your own heart, yeah. This kind of behavior. Even if you have not recognized. Yeah. Sometimes very easy to recognize, sometimes very difficult. The most difficult thing is to accept that we have this kind of behavior in us, yeah, that we see in others. It's such a good and helpful investigation. And it also pulls us back, you know, I mean, if we dislike another person or if we dislike what the other person is doing, yeah, it always, you know, throws us back onto ourselves, yeah, because we cannot change the other person, but we can change ourselves. It's not the other person that does something wrong. It's we that we dislike this behavior because we know, our chitta knows it is within us, yeah? And the moment you have, investigated and let go of it, you know, no matter how, yeah? You see this person, you know, and there's no dislike coming up, yeah? There's actually, when you have gone and investigate this misbehavior within yourself, there will be a lot of metta, there will be a lot of compassion with this person who behaves like that. Because we understand through what kind of dukkha he goes through, you know, in order to be able to do this misbehavior. Yeah? But that is not easy. Sometimes it took me weeks, you know, I mean, no, I'm not like this. Yes, you are like this. No, I'm not like this. Yes, you are like this. Oh. It was a fight, it was a constant fight that always flared up every 5 minutes. No, I'm not losing. Yes. Yeah. I mean, you constantly have to go against, you know, whatever you think you are. Yeah. You constantly have to go against it. Yeah. Only until it boils down, you know, and it is weak. Then you can see what is behind it. And it's mostly of you and opinion, yeah. That triggers this dislike or this behavior. Okay.
Okay. Next question: how do we balance our perceived feelings of freedom in having time to practice, with the knowledge that our death may be imminent? Thank you.
What? Can somebody explain?
Yeah, not too sure.
Huh?
You might think that you have time to practice because, I mean, you might still live for some time. But then, how do we balance this with the knowledge that You might die anytime.
Do you understand?
Not really. I think it's just kind of like, should we be practicing 24/7 every minute because we might die any second? Or like, how do we deal with that kind of urgency?
I mean, death can be imminent at any time, you know. I mean, for us as practitioner, the time that we have that we don't use, you know, for our livelihood, we should always try to to be with our object of concentration, with our object of meditation, be it the breath or be it the Buddha. And then, you know, I mean, death can come any time. I don't know, I don't really understand the question, but that, I mean, the answer is always, you know, the more mindful we are, you know, I mean, the more we are prepared, the more we are aware of what is going on, the more we are prepared for our death. Yeah. That's...
I'm not sure, maybe it was meant in a way that if you are like constantly aware of your own death, that many things don't make much sense. Like, if you think you die tomorrow, you wouldn't go to work, or maybe it's meant this way, but I'm not sure. That it's difficult to put effort in and like a long-term perspective.
Oh, if you think you know that you die tomorrow, why put some effort in your practice today? And that is a wrong view. Yeah. I mean, we can die any moment, Oh, you know, I mean, we can still have 30, 40, 50, 60 years of life. We don't know. Yeah. But what we know is, you know, this very moment, you know. We know if we are with the breath, or we know if we are with the Buddha, or we know if we go about our livelihood. I mean, the knowingness is the most important factor in this. And I mean, whenever our death comes, we don't know. Yeah, I mean, don't stare like a rabbit, you know, in the face of a snake. Yeah, I mean, they get stiff. Yeah, that's not useful. Is it? Isn't it a rabbit with a snake or what is it?
No,
I don't think.
A rabbit in the headlights?
No, a headlight. No. Whatever. Yeah. I mean, I really don't understand the question properly. Yeah. So, but that is my answer to what I think. What I think I understood.
Next, the question is, I'm not completely sure whether the Buddha or Ajahn said just aim for Nirvana, but please suggest what this means and how we might practice accordingly. Thank you.
Pana? What?
Nirvana.
Bhavana.
Nirvana.
Yeah, but what's the question?
Nirvana. I didn't hear the answer to the question.
What is about Nirvana? How we practice towards Nirvana? As I said, you know, removing one stone after the other until we see the light. And that means, practicing bhavana, the practice of bhavana is samatha or vipassana. Samatha is calm meditation, vipassana is investigation. And investigation is not investigation life, except for our life of birth and death, not the sense of life. Investigation is investigation of five skandhas. That's what we are attached to. And that is the only way to Nibbana. If you don't investigate, you don't get to Nibbana. What is that? Mm-hmm. There's some error.
I mean, the battery is running low, which is surprising.
What?
Battery is running low. Yeah, in theory, it should be gone.
Are you still there?
Well,
you turn it on. Yeah. That of course,
that
you know, would be helpful if you turn on the power. So, are you still there?
Yes, I can.
Okay.
We can hear you.
Yeah, I mean, don't think, you know, don't think so much, you know, just go. If you want to go, you know, I know, no matter what city you want to go, or no matter what country to go, the only way, you know, to get there is, you know, to go along the path, and read the signs, Read the signs correctly, otherwise you will end up in a different city. Yeah? So we have to be aware of the signs, you know, and which direction we should go. Yeah. And for us, you know, as practitioners, it's very easy. Yeah? Am I with my Buddha or not? Am I with the breath or not? Yeah. Or am I with the object of investigation? That's all the questions that we need to ask. Yeah. If I'm not, you know, I return to the object of investigation. If not, I return to the Buddha. If not, I return to the breath. More we don't need to know. It's so simple, you know, that, and that is the thing that is so difficult. we try, you know, I mean, the most complex formulas, we try, you know, we try to understand and think like that. Yeah. I mean, practice itself is so simple. Am I with the Buddha? Yeah? Then I return to the Buddha. Am I with the breath? Yeah? Am I not with the breath? Then I return to the breath. Yeah? Am I with my object of investigation? Then I return. It's fine, you know, if I'm not, then I return to the object of investigation. That's the whole thing that we need to ask. Yeah? In the morning we get up, you know, and then we ask, yeah? Master, yeah? Where's my Buddha? Okay, there's the Buddha. Or where's my breath? There's the breath. Yeah? And then walking chankrum, yeah? Yeah? Oh? At the end of the walking path, you know, we turn around, have I been with the Buddha? No, it was lost. Yeah? Okay, this path I will be with my Buddha, this path I will be with the breath. Yeah? And then we go to the end of the path, oh, the Buddha has been lost. Don't even think about where the Buddha has been lost, you know, just this path I will be with the Buddha, this path I will be with the breath. Not the same. Yeah? So, and it's the same for investigation, yeah. Am I with my object of investigation or not? That's the only question that we need to ask. Yeah? But it's too simple. We try to make it so complicated. Ah, am I doing the Buddha right? Am I doing the Buddha wrong? No, you observe. We're not doing the breath right or wrong. Yeah? Yeah? We're just observing or not observing or trying to control the Buddha or trying to control the breath. Yeah? That's right. We try to control. I mean, we are control freaks. Yeah? What I talked about last time. Really control. I mean, we'll learn to control. Eh? We even think that we can control the climate of the world. Yeah? Oh, you know, I mean, control this or control that. Or, yeah? No. We're there to observe. Yeah? I mean, as practitioners, we're there to observe. Did it sink in? Huh? Sani, did it sink in? And here also, you know, huh? And trying to control, yeah? It just makes headache and get nauseous, yeah? Okay, next question, it's about time, you know, to stop, you know, sooner or later, yeah? I'm sitting there already, what is it, an hour or?
Yeah, so maybe just do
1.5 hours.
Question.
What?
Yes, yeah, about 1.5 hours.
Okay. Did he send the questions beforehand? You didn't give them to me.
Is that okay?
Oh, no, me. He didn't.
I was there, I came over there last April, if you recall me. Since then, I also went to Sri Lanka for 5 months. There I practiced meditation, and I'm back in here, this state in Omaha. So I'm in a state I don't have much this desire for the way life, but art is what it is, practice, and I'm just kind of in a confused state, so I don't know how to move forward. So I appreciate your advice. That's the first question I have.
You're in the United States, huh? Where do you live?
Yeah, in Omaha, United States.
Omaha,
Nebraska.
Nebraska. Oh. And what is your livelihood? What do you work?
Physics doctorate. Now I'm in the corporate sector, doing actuarial analysis.
Oh, analytic. Ah, you need to use your brain a lot. So,
yeah.
I mean, you have to set the priorities in your life. If the priority is meditation or practice, yeah, then you have to wake up every morning, you know, with the Buddha or with the breath, yeah. And until you go to work, yeah, until you have to do something where you have to actually think about it, yeah. I mean, when you cook, you don't have to think about it, you just do it. You know, when you do certain things, and most of the housework, you know, you don't really have to think about it. You just observe and do it, yeah? And so you can stay with the breath or you can stay with the Buddha. When you go to work, you know, I mean, observe the moment and you be with the breath or you be with the Buddha until you sit down at your desk, yeah? And then the first paper that you have, or the first magazine that you have to read, or the first letter that you have to read, then your mind is gone. Yeah? And then try to make a few break points. Yeah, whenever you go and drink some coffee, or drink some tea, or a cold drink, or when you go to eat, or when you go to the toilet, make a break point. Stop thinking. Yeah, use your Buddha or use your breath. Yeah. This will give you some moments, you know, that you don't use 8, 10 hours, you know, of your work, you know, and you have no sati at all. Yeah, you just go ahead and work. Yeah? So get some break points during your work. Yeah, and when you go home, leave the work aside. Yeah, and just stay with the Buddha or just stay with the breath. Yeah, and then reflect in the evening once the mind is calm. Reflect about the daily, about your daily activities. What did I do first? What kind of thoughts came into my mind? What kinds of memories? You know, what kind of feelings? Yeah, what was my reaction? You know, and so on and so on. Do this reflection, but do not judge it was good or bad. Do not judge. That is a very important thing. Yeah, and then over the time, yeah, not on the first day, not after 2 weeks, not after maybe not even after 3 months, you will get a clearer understanding of your own behavior and how you react to others and why you react to the others in this way and why what is going on in your heart. Yeah? Okay, so
very. If I may, then can I ask a follow-up question?
Yeah. But let me first say something to the, yeah? The daily reflection is very important, yeah? Sunanda, yeah? And Windy as well, yeah? I mean for everyone, yeah? I always put it at the heart of my practitioners, yeah? Every day, you know, to do the daily reflection. If you forget about it and just skip the next point, don't think about very much, yeah? Just go to the next point, yeah? Because that is how we really understand what is going on in our heart, yeah? Otherwise we will never, yeah? We just do things, you know? We never reflect about what we're doing, why we are doing, yeah? What came before the doing? There comes an intention. What came before the intention? There came a feeling or there came a memory. This is the important thing. We have to catch that, yeah? What makes us do something? What makes us say something? What makes us react? Yeah? If you don't know that, I mean, we have no way out. Okay, now follow up question.
Mr. Chan, so while in Sri Lanka, like I was doing a walking chandram, like sometimes like over 2 hours,
yeah.
And I was doing the Buddha, repeating the Buddha while I was walking. So I got to a state like, especially I was going over 2 hours, like where the thoughts and memories were gone, but I was fully aware of the presence. Like I'm fully with the Buddha, but I can also hear the sound and everything, but that is it. From there, I cannot go beyond that. I'm just wondering whether, because I had to stop at the end of the path, and
yeah,
is that like a hindrance in some way, or maybe
no.
I'm making it a hindrance?
No.
I am not going beyond that.
Yeah, you're not making a hindrance, but you don't put enough effort in your practice. Yeah, so if you would have walked for 6 hours, then something might have happened. Yeah, so why did you stop after 2 hours? Yeah.
I'm getting frustrated because I was.
See, and that is our expectations, yeah? And in meditation, our expectations, now I'm very close. No, you're far away when you think you're very close, yeah? The moment you think, very close. Oh, or even if we are in samadhi, it's so nice. The moment we think, that is so nice, we are out of samadhi. Yeah? And this something, yeah, this expectation, and especially for people who live in the West, yeah, but now even for Asians, this expectation, yeah, I mean, destroys our meditation. Don't expect anything, and then things will just happen. Yeah? And sometimes you have to walk for 3 hours, 4 hours, 5 hours. Yeah, I mean, you can be able to go really into samadhi, you know, when doing walking meditation. My own experience, yeah? I mean, after 2 hours, nothing, you know, I mean, it was still clear, you know, nothing was happening around. Yeah? After the third hour, suddenly, you know, I was sitting, you know, beside the walking path and saw myself walking up and down, walking up and down, walking up and down, yeah? So it can happen. But if the moment we expect something to happen, yeah, I mean, it will never happen. The moment we think we are very close to the to samadhi, I mean, we are so far away from it. Okay?
Understood. Thank you, Ajahn. Another question, if I may have, if somebody else have, I mean...
What?
I have another question, if I may ask.
Yeah, a short question, yeah. I mean, it's already long, yeah. So, okay, go ahead, you know, you don't have...
I was just wondering, especially here people in the United States, I know some colleagues who like hunting and they're like happy about it, or I cannot and some people, and what I know of the people who are very ashamed, feel a lot of shame even by... speaking for myself, when I was a child, I caught a few fish by fishing, only a few, but I feel some kind of shame for that. So I'm just wondering, is there a difference in karma, whether you feel shame or not? Of the wrong view, somebody might not have any shame at all, they might actually be happy about it, but somebody who has that shame inside, then feels shame about it. So is there a difference in the karma between those two?
It has nothing to do with karma. It is a protection. It's called hiri or tapa. Ne? Shame, and what is it?
Compunction is usually how it's translated.
I know another translation.
Shame and fear.
What?
Shame and fear.
No, second. Yeah, fear and shame. Yeah, it's a good sign. Yeah. I mean, if you feel ashamed of doing something bad, that is something that protects you from doing bad again. I mean, if people are happy, you know, of catching 20 fish, you know, and killing them, yeah, I mean, you can't help them. Because they don't have the shame, yeah? They don't have this fear, you know, of doing something wrong, yeah? Yeah? Let them do, you know, I mean, if they want to be born as a fish, you know, it's their karma, yeah? If they hunt deers and tigers and elephants, you know, it's their karma, you know. That's how we get into the animal world, yeah? By killing animals. And to get out of the animal world is very, very long. Yeah? So, I mean, this is a good sign, yeah? To feel ashamed, yeah? Or to feel afraid of doing something. Then follow this shame and don't do it again. Okay? It's a development in your practice, yeah? People who don't feel shame, you know, I mean, they really have not gone onto the spiritual practice. Yeah, it's a karma, you know, from your previous lives, you know, where you feel, yeah? Or it is also, you know, because of your upbringing as an Indian, yeah? Or whatever, you're from Sri Lanka, maybe from Sri Lanka, yeah? More Buddhist country. No, it's good. Yeah, but now, okay. Next time, next Zoom session, you can ask more questions.
Thank you, Ajahn.
Yeah.
So, Ajahn, I think there are a couple of questions that not answered related to the next time round.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and something would be really helpful. Yeah, if you can send us the questions, you know, because they come in before. Yeah. I mean, if you can send us the question that you have, yeah, the day before in a mail, yeah, then we can, because sometimes it is very difficult, yeah, to listen, yeah, I mean, the sound is hacked sometimes, and so it is difficult for me to understand what is asked there. Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, make up the next Zoom session, you know, and then, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know the date.
Okay. What? Yeah, I mean, practice, yeah, practice, yeah. That's the only thing. And the more the world is at upheaval or, you know, in chaos, yeah, I mean, the more you have to practice, yeah. You understand that, yeah? Don't get involved in what is happening in the world. Stay at yourself, yeah? Be yourself, because that's how you keep sanity, that's how you keep, you know, clear vision, yeah? Whatever happens in the world, you know, I mean, let it be. Yeah? You can't change it. You can't even change your, when you're married, you can't change your partner. Yeah? You can't change your children because it's their karma, you know, how they are. Yeah? You can't change this, you can't change that. Yeah? You can only, you can change people if they are really intent on listening to you and following your advice. That's how I can change people. Yeah? But they have to change themselves. Yeah? I can invite them to change themselves. That's the only thing I can. But the world is in a mess, so I mean, don't get involved in it. That is my real advice, you know, for you. Yeah? And if I have more, you know, the moment I know more about it, yeah, I will let you know. Yeah? At the moment I don't know, yeah, I mean, it seems like it's boiling up, but if it boils over, I don't know yet. Okay, so.
Thank you, Ajahn, for the advice and all the teachings and guidance today. Yeah. So, let's all pay respects to Ben Ajahn together. Bow.
Respect you pay in your heart, yeah. Not too formal, yeah. And Linda and Asang, do you hear me? Huh? I mean, get out of Brunei and come here to Thailand. Where is Asang? Where is Asang and Linda? Still there?
I saw Asang.
Did they? Or did he break up already?
No, Linda.
Shani, did you break up?
Linda's there.
Chaladi, no problem. Hey?
Yeah, pack your bags and come to Thailand, yeah? Yeah, this will end soon, yeah.
Yeah.
Hopefully before the war. Okay, so bye-bye, everybody, yeah. And practice, yeah. And the same holds true for you, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Mm.
Yep, thank you. Good night, everyone. Mm.
Yeah, pain, huh? Pain. Moving around, huh? Investigation of pain, yeah. Very useful. This is something we so much hate, we so much dislike, yeah. We always try to shift around, you know, move this and this and this, yeah. And the pain will not go, yeah. The first time you shift, you know, 5 minutes later you shift the second time, three minutes later you shift the third time, and 4 minutes, and 2 minutes later you get up. Yeah? If you don't shift, you can stay on for another half an hour. Yeah? Pain. Kau chai ba mai? Nid noi. Okay. Mermi vela go go cha te ne pa sa thai mermi vela no. At the moment, I have lots of things to do and look after. Yeah, a new kut is built, and then we need to rearrange the whole power distribution in this monastery. So, lots of work to do. I need another engineer, Vindi. But you're a software engineer, huh? No? You're an electrical engineer.
No.
What?
Industrial.
Industrial.
Sounds good.
Carlos as well, isn't he? No, what are you?
Civil engineer.
He's a civil engineer, but that is industrial civil engineer. Oh, very close, isn't it?
Pretty much the same.
For me, forgive me. We don't have another electrical engineer here? No? Thank you. What did you do? What kind of work did you do?
In terms of trade.
What?
International trade.
Oh, international trade. Ah, yeah, you told me. I forget, you know, forgive me, I'm really forgetful. Yeah? Michael?
I was a medic.
Medic?
Yeah.
That's good. And Ludovic?
Civil engineer.
Oh, there we go.
Electrical.
Wow. Electrical.
I don't like electric.
Well. You don't like electric. You don't like 220 watts?
Crazy people.
What?
No, I'm kind of fed up with electric.
Ah.
Basic, we need basic things are okay, but.
Okay, weiter leer. Wollen wir kommen da mal? Na, kommt da, ne? Wie sie tun, ne?
Ja,
meine. Da kommt hier. Ah, Papa na putto, 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 putto. Ah, Madame Kittrang nie, Kittrang non, ne?